Hello and welcome to another episode of the It Depends podcast. Today I'm hosting, I'm Daniel Pritchett. I'm here with Jesse Brown.
Hey everybody.
And we've got David Momo Hundro.
How's it going?
All right. Today we are going to talk about DevOps and scaling. Another, fourth episode in our DevOps series?
Something like that, yeah.
Today we're going to talk about scaling up versus scaling out. And before we get into that, I want to remind everybody we have tweets at ClearFunction with the hashtag It Depends. And with that, I'm going to ask Mo, tell me what you think when you say scale up versus scale out.
So, good question. So, one of the things about that is, how do you handle additional load, right? So server runs on your machine, app, whatever, you know, your code runs on your machine, but you're talking about moving it to production, or maybe it's been on production for a while. You've got 20 people hitting the site. It's great. And suddenly you have 200. So it's like, okay, or 2,000 or 2 million or whatever, yeah. Right? You've got growth. Right. So one of the things that you'll have to deal with is, how do you handle that traffic? And it's something that lots of small apps deal with as, you know, that something is built and it works for years, but then you finally get that, hit that success mark, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And a lot of things that you would have typically done with a small app with a single server just don't work in a farm. So right. What I mean by what it's meant to to scale horizontally versus vertically, or to out versus up, is, do you grow a server? Do you add more RAM, throw more hardware at it, and say, oh, yeah, we're going to give this all the RAM in the world, bigger hard drive, more cores, stuff like that? Or do you add more servers?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. Yeah, that's a good explanation there. And I guess in the old days, you used to almost always scale up.
Right.
That was sort of the only way to scale for a long time is, you know, I don't know. It was just sort of it's the easiest thing to do. If you're right. Sort of your own shop, you've got your own server, you can maybe ask your server provider to, instead of having two CPUs and 4 gig of RAM, you can up it to, you know, 8 CPUs and 16 gig of RAM.
Right.
And like that would, you know, increase your throughput and your ability to serve more users instantly,
you know,
because most things are virtual. So when we talk about scaling up, even today, you're generally just talking about like some slider in some data center that gives you access to more resources.
Right.
Obviously, if you're in your data center, like you used to before sort of the cloud was popular, you would actually have to physically go put in a new box if you didn't have sufficient resources to reallocate.
One issue with scaling up, though, is obviously that there are limits, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like actual physical limits to, like, and also price.
Yeah.
That's one of the big factors of scaling up. While it can be the easiest solution, and a lot of times people scale up different parts of their system and scale out other parts. And,
yes.
Like, scaling out a web tier is very popular. Scaling up a database server generally more acceptable. And, that's because they're made to sort of be one machine. As soon as you introduce multiple machines for like a database tier, you introduce like more latency or like a much more constrained configuration as far as having replicas, read-only replicas, read-write, like, you know, who's the master, who's the slave, all that sort of stuff. The web tiers are generally a pretty dumb tier as far as like they take a request, they do what they're supposed to do, and they send a response. And so those make it a lot easier for that tier to scale out. And basically scaling out is cloning a server over and over and over again. So instead of just having one big server with eight processors and 8 gig of RAM, you can have, you know, one virtual processor and 2 gig of RAM, and you can just, you know, clone that 20 times.
Yeah. So one thing that is like Jesse said, the scaling out web servers is typically a lot easier. Lots of the cloud architecture out there sort of encourages it by adding easy, you know, file systems that are, you know, separate service. Like Amazon, you've got S3, because the problem is with adding a new web server is if you're writing to a local file system and now you've got two web servers,
right?
You either have to have a network share or a network file-based thing or something like that. Some other places where you run into limitations are like in-memory cache.
Right. If you're using in-memory cache, then you know, yeah, and you've got two servers. They both have to warm up their cache to be as effective as one another.
Yeah.
If you end up having, if you're scaling out, and if you scale out to 100 servers, well, now you've got to warm up 100 servers to get the, you know, effectiveness of caching that you were looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've helped some clients move from what was obviously a single server situation into a farm just for scalability, but it meant rewriting their existing session code and, you know, right, things like that. So,
yeah. And I'm not sure today if it's still true, but it used to be true that licensing cost was a big deal for scaling out. Because if you're a Windows shop, if you did like ASP.NET or ASP, classic ASP, like you'd have to have more Windows licenses to scale out. And so that's not a zero number. So, you know, if suddenly you're talking about going from one web server to 20, well, that's, you know, 20 times the server cost, just on paper of just to get an activation license for Windows Server. These days, I think they have different editions and data center edition. Right. And I don't know what the, I haven't bought it in a long time. It's usually through cloud providers. So I haven't really done much with it recently. So
paid databases tend to charge based on the size of your system too, right?
Yeah. Which Server 2016 just with this version changed to be more like SQL Server pricing, which means it's per core.
Gotcha.
So they are actually going that way too, but yeah.
Yeah, they're trying to make sure they've got the, something that scales up or scales out at a reasonable price.
One thing that we haven't mentioned yet about scaling up is that implies more of an in-place change.
That's true.
So you have to probably take the server down or maybe have some sort of hot swapping migration with VMware or something from a really big VM to an even bigger VM.
Right. Yeah. Depending on the, if you're already virtualized, there's probably no downtime or very minimum downtime. Right. But if you're not virtualized, if you've actually got this just installed on the hardware in your data center, scaling up it's going to incur downtime, generally speaking, you know, because you're going to have to take it down, create an image, perhaps. This would be a good time to get into virtualization because if this happens once, there's a good chance that it's going to happen again. You know, if you scale up now and you spend a little bit of money to make it better, like who's to say in a year you won't be in the same exact scenario? So you probably, if you're not virtualizing, probably should be.
So have y'all ever worked with scaling out databases?
Databases? I was thinking earlier that what we discussed about scaling databases up being easier, I think that's probably more true in the case of a traditional relational database. If you have a simpler type of, say, NoSQL database, you might be able to shard things easier.
Yeah.
But no, not really.
You said right there sharding, though. That's about the only consistent way that I've heard in terms of doing.
Yeah, well, I guess I have in two cases. The closest I've really done in production was a Postgres database for an e-commerce system on Heroku. And it was the transactional system, so people were placing orders. They needed them to be captured quickly so they could buy their stuff and get out. But it was also an operational system for the warehouse, the fulfillment system. So people would run reports to see what are this week's orders, what are today's orders that need to be moved from this desk to that desk in the workflow. And those got really slow sometimes, and that would compromise the performance of the front end. So if somebody clicks the wrong drop downs on the reporting end, they could suddenly mess with the income on the front end of the site. So I found a gem that just allowed me to set up a follower database. Well, the follower database I had to set up on my own, but in this case, the gem just said that from within the web framework, I could tell any given web page or action to go to this database or that one. So everything would default to go into the primary database, but these reporting pages, I told them, when you run this query, your connection string is different from everybody else's, so connect to this other database. So it was a live backup database that was only used for reporting stuff, so that it didn't slow down the
SQL Server, and I'm sure other ones do it as well, with like read-only replicas is sort of how they scale out. It's a little different, right? Because they don't allow writes, and so you still sort of have a master, and you're not improving the overall performance of like your day-to-day stuff so much as it is like having a second place to read to offload. I mean, it is scaling it out, but it's quite different from like what most people would, you know, you're not cloning a SQL Server exactly because they do have to communicate with each other and keep themselves in sync and all that. So it is, a different problem to solve, but sharding and replication or how it's they achieve that generally.
Helps to, that's at least one of the ways that I think about where it's easier to scale out is when it's purely processing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As soon as there's like state, you can almost think of it if you're familiar with functional programming. It's like if the processing can be thought of conceptually as like a function, then you can scale that out pretty easily. Mm-hmm. As soon as there's state or something like that, then you just start to run into some problems.
Right. Yeah, and you alluded to it earlier. If you scale up, while that's pretty good, you do have physical limitations of like the hardware, what you can afford, what you can slam into your racks that you still have or whatever if you've got actual hardware. But there's also just limitations to, you know, the physical space that you own or can own, like, you know, scaling out is limitless with the cloud providers pretty much, right? Like it's effectively limitless. So you have the ability to have hundreds or thousands of web servers where just doing that on like pure hardware, like you can't just keep scaling up exponentially your like processor and your RAM and your hard disk access speeds and all that. You know, you just have to, at some point you hit your limits. And so scaling out for things that are just going to be the front end web servers is one of the big advantages there, is that it's just, there are no limits to how much you can scale out.
Yeah. I think you're kind of hinting at something I was worried about earlier. When you scale up, the marginal cost to double in size is not necessarily 100%. Like if you've got 64 gigs of RAM in a server that's full and you want to have 128, it may cost more than twice what it did before to get bigger everything.
Yep. Absolutely. And you're more susceptible to hardware failures. True. If you scale up, like losing a hard drive or losing like, you know, a stick of RAM is going to have a much more profound effect than if you had if you had 100 web servers. And that 64 gig of RAM was spread across 64 web servers or whatever, you know, like it's just, if you lose one, they're just much more fault tolerant because they are independent machines that are on different hardware across the, you know.
And that's a great thing to talk about in terms of scaling out is uptime. You know, if you lose, 128 gig, database server, you know, someone pours their drink all over it or something like that. It's like, for one, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You may have a cluster or something, but the cost to replace that alone will, you know, hurt you quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So in terms of just like you have to do patches in the Linux world as well, but especially, you know, in the Windows world, you know, you got Patch Tuesday. Well, if you've got a single web server, you got to reboot that thing. Well, okay, we're going to be down for 5-10 minutes while the patches get installed.
Yeah, I hope the patches run well.
So I mean that's one reason right there.
You get one blue screen and it's
You're gone.
Yeah.
So having, you know, 2, 3 or however many you need allows you to more easily handle if there's an application crash or patches or whatever, just in terms of uptime. It will get your highly available system going there. So
definitely. Right. If you're kind of deploying to your hardware the first time and you've just had a single server running your website for a long time and you think it's time to scale now, one of the things that you will run into when you start scaling out is you have to have more networking equipment.
Absolutely.
Right? You'll end up having to have, or at least more knowledge of networking. You don't necessarily have to have any more physical equipment, but you'll certainly have to think about DNS or load balancers of some sort. Like, you know, you can do the lazy man's load balancer with just DNS, right? But like at some point you'll probably want to have something that ends up, you know, intelligently sending it to a server that is less busy than the other server. Because obviously if you have the wrong setup, if you have two servers and almost 80% of your traffic is going to one of them, then one's just going to sit there idling, doing you no good. And it's going to be a waste of money, right? And a waste of resources all around.
So. It sounds like you're getting into software-defined networking, which I just know a tiny bit about. Like I've read about services where maybe the routing layer would keep track of who's responding and how quickly and whatnot, and use that to decide who gets the rest of the traffic dynamically. Sounds useful, but I've not messed with it.
Yeah, a lot of them are usually like a physical machine. Usually the ones that I've worked with most closely are F5s. Those are the load balancers that I have the most experience with, and you can code them, and you can, you know, they can set their own sort of rules of whether they're going to keep affinity to a server, and that means keeping, you know, Daniel here at server one right. for as long as, you know, every page request, as long as server one is still available, then he will go to server one. Mm-hmm. And that is because you run into other issues when you scale out, like if you're using in-memory sessions or mm-hmm. if, yeah. like you were talking about, like if you have something in memory that you're caching and then you expect that to be available on the next page, like maybe you just decided to store a piece of information that Daniel gave you. And then you're like, yeah, cool. I'll just store that in memory. And then as soon mm-hmm. as he comes to the next page, I'll just spit that out on the screen so he can confirm it. Well, as soon as you've got like five web servers, the chances of him going to web server two and then that not being in memory, you're going to have all sorts of errors. In .NET, this is like session or ASP.NET. It was just session. And the default is like in memory, unless you tell it to be backed by SQL or Redis or some other backend for your session management.
Yeah. It's fascinating for me to think that this is probably a $5,000-$10,000 solution to what could be a programming problem. If you'd known ahead of time this was going to happen and maybe you designed around it, you wouldn't have needed that specific feature. It's but true. Then again, programming time isn't free either, so I'm okay with it. It's just kind of funny to think about. Like, there's a market for that. People who have working apps and don't want to go rebuild everything to be completely stateless between requests.
There's also cloud solutions, like Jesse was saying, with Route 53?
Yeah.
With Amazon. Uh-huh. It's DNS, but it's also can do a lot of that. There's cloud load balancers. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. Like an F5 is expensive. Mm-hmm. And so
a lot of it's commodity in the cloud as well. I'm sure that whether they're F5s or not, you know, Amazon, Azure, Google, they all have load balancers that you can mm-hmm. programmatically configure. And at the end of the day, they're doing the same sorts of things. And like you were talking about the affinity, like that's solving a problem for servers that maybe were never used to scaling out, but also, you know, there are load balancers do things like they point you to the same server because that server's already warmed up. Mm-hmm. That server also may already have a connection established with you from your like SSL termination and things like that. Mm-hmm. Like you get into more things about like, okay, well, maybe I can make my web tier a lot dumber and have the SSL termination at this F5 or at the load balancer mm-hmm. so that I don't have to configure. It's one less thing to automatically configure in your Docker environment. Like you can just run on some custom port. And then your F5 can, make it port 80 for your users, but it's some random port without SSL in between the F5 and your machine. And
one thing is, as you add complexity and multiple, tiers like that, like if you have a single F5, then you once again do have a single point of failure.
Yep. Right.
So if your F5 dies, so it's you are accepting, especially if you're in your own data center. This is one of the other benefits with cloud is it just helps it make this stuff simpler and often cheaper if you can do something like that.
It's definitely cheaper in like downtime scenarios because they've got people working around the clock who are experts on all these layers to quickly get those systems back up. Doesn't mean the downtime doesn't happen. We've all seen cloud have the downtime and it happens and it's expensive for everyone involved and it makes you want to make your own data center when it happens to you. But at the same time, like, you know, just the likely they have much more redundancy in place than you will ever have.
Right.
And so I like pushing people to the cloud a lot of times. It just gives, a piece of comfort, just mm-hmm. to know that there's a lot of people looking out for me.
We probably got a few more minutes left on this. I wanted to ask you guys, you've mentioned adding complexity as being necessary as you're trying to move into more highly specialized environments. Mm-hmm. Like if you start from a single web server running your web app and your database, and then maybe you want to move out to something that's got five or six different pieces on the cloud somewhere, what types of things would you look to do to speed up? Like, what types of problems do you see, and what are the go-to solutions? Like, just for hints, I'm thinking of stuff like Redis and Sidekick.
Usually come
in pretty early in my app's life cycle, but you mentioned S3 earlier. There's tons of other stuff.
Yeah, I think, if you're running your own stuff, like some sort of redundant share, whether that's S3 or if you're in your own data center, some sort of share that's mounted on a highly available array of disks somewhere, so that you can have things like your file sharing. If your file upload service, you want to keep those highly available, and you can use mount points and all that sort of stuff. Like you run into a lot of things. Obviously, your database making that not the same machine as your web is like step one, because you don't want to scale them both at the same time. Even if you could, you probably don't want to. You probably want to break those into chunks just for like, you know, just to keep it all in your head and of what's going on. Be like, all right, first step, move database to its own thing. And then you could talk about, okay, well, the problem seemed, that didn't fix my CPU problem. So it's clearly the web tier. Or maybe you learn at that moment that it's the database tier that's eating up all your CPU. And so now you can take those steps to scale up your database independently of, you know, take one problem at a time.
Well, one thing to say, too, I mean, I think you were getting to this, Daniel, is like maybe having some sort of APM solution, application performance monitoring.
Sure.
So that you can see where is the hotspots in your system.
Mm-hmm.
If you, for example, are running out of memory or if you're running out of CPU or it may turn out that you may just have some threads that are blocked where it's like it's just throughput within your system itself
right.
that can be solved with a relatively simple coding fix.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You in any case, when you're scaling up or scaling out, you usually want to be aware of what are you solving.
Yeah, you want to know the problem before you get in there and start playing with stuff. Yeah.
If there is a threading issue here, adding another server might hide it, but it's like you're not actually fixing the problem.
Yeah.
So
and sometimes that's okay. I mean, depending on how fast you have unexpectedly scaled up, throwing money in a problem and making more servers or making bigger servers is sometimes the right call, right? Just to get past. Depends on what your expectations are. If it's you're suddenly have a whole bunch of visitors that you didn't expect and you want them to stay there. And you don't want to worry about, you know, you're not too worried about the cost, then you just kind of throw money at the problem and you hope they're going to taper off. But if you're expecting them to be there forever, then you need to start, you know, looking to see what's the actual problem here. Like, so make sure you're monitoring and writing.
I totally agree with Jesse there. I'm all for throwing money at surprise scaling issues if you're getting revenue out of it. But Mo, it sounded like you were hinting at some things that may be completely serialized that no amount of scaling is going to help unless you actually address the problem. Do you have any examples in mind there?
Oh, just I've seen some cases where, like, if there is a thread blocking issue or something like that where you're parallel processing and your thread pool has, we'll say, 10 threads at a time, 10 requests.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where, in development, it works. It works, it works, and suddenly in testing you have 10 connections at once and no one else can come in.
I guess we had that with Sifter last year, right, with the issue number service?
Yeah, exactly. So it's sort of, it requires a little bit of knowledge about your system, but it's like, at some point you may be just running at the limits. Like it's what a denial of service attack is you're eating up all the connections.
Right.
And so that's where, you know, something like a Cloudflare or some of the other solutions that are sort of just saying, look, this is the number of connections I can take coming in. I can't take any more without adding additional scaling to your system.
Right.
And sometimes it's not worth it because it's going to happen one time and you can just make your users wait. But you sort of have to know.
Yeah. Visibility is like number one concern, you know, because like you said, like some people will throw money at a problem and create another web server and they're like, cool, we did all this web server. And then it performs exactly the same because they realize that most of what's causing it to slow down is like bad SQL performance.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, well, if we had just saw that it was the SQL queries that were taking too long,
then we
could have optimized these or thrown money at the hardware there instead if that was the problem instead of the web tier. So visibility is super important before you do any scaling.
Yeah. I've been chasing some application performance stuff this morning, and it's been a lot of fun. I started out with some slow queries. I thought I'd put them in a stored procedure. Jesse pointed out that might not necessarily magically improve them, but and it didn't. Looking at the New Relic charts, I could see that the peaks of my graph were the same size, but the brown parts had turned purple because I'd hidden my SQL somewhere else. And then I started rewriting the stored procedures with some hints on locking and stuff, and that's helped. But then also I've been looking elsewhere in the New Relic sats, and I've seen that doing certain peaks in load, I've got a tab for external service access, and there's one for Bugsnag. So suddenly, under heavy load, I'm sending tons of information to Bugsnag, and they're all runtime warnings about one line of code in the hottest hot loop in the app that's doing something it technically can't do, but it's getting away with. So
interesting.
I added like a one-line guard clause, and it's still working the same way it was before. It's just not spitting out a million warnings a second to a remote system. And by the way, this is all going on Apache, and it's not doing a background job or anything. So it was actually blocking the web.
So Bugsnag was like happening in process, right?
So your logging there to try to catch the problem was actually, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and this one piece of the app takes up like 75% of the throughput of the system day to day. So I was having fun optimizing that hot loop. I should probably stop and look at the big picture again. But I think it helped.
I've seen a case where there was it wasn't an external logging system, but an internal error log for tracking. And it actually, at one point, got so large that it was actually affecting performance from other parts when it tried to insert into it.
Oh, wow.
So an exception occurred. It tried to insert, but it was just, you know,
yeah,
the performance issues there. And the solution in this case was actually to create an archive of this table mm-hmm. and then empty it out. So it's changing the way that we're storing data.
It's like 10 years worth of error logs exactly, that you had to archive off. And like no one was looking at them day to day, so it was cool to do. But like, you have to know. Yeah.
Huh. Anyway.
But I mean, it's sort of like, We could have made our database server bigger, but it was already big.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have not been the right solution at that point. So one other thing I wanted to talk about is just deployments. That's one thing that does get complicated.
Yeah, that's a big one.
When you talk about usually web servers, you go from 1 or 2 to 10.
One FTP.
Yeah, exactly.
Copy to like 10 simultaneously or like in a row and checking for status, like you've got rolling
or A/B deployments. It's just there's lots of tools out there to help with that.
Right.
But that's, you know, visibility is like, was this a bad deployment? You don't want to, maybe you want to push it to one server, verify that it looks good.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw a post recently, I want to say it was GitHub or Facebook, or they both talk about that, but their strategies for deploying to hundreds mm-hmm. of servers
right.
is they'll push it to a small batch and
slowly increment.
Yeah, but and they're monitoring it and they can stop it at some point, mm-hmm. roll back.
Yeah. And part of it you have to know you have to start thinking about things like, is my code okay to run in its current state and the new state at the
same
time?
Yes.
Right. Because if you're used to just one server, then you changing the code, you know with 100% certainty that the code that used to be there is no longer running and that only your new code's running. That's not the case when you're deploying to, you know, 5, 10, 20, 500 servers, right? You're rolling them out one by one and you can't guarantee success on all of them. And so you have to, you know, change your architecture as you code to make sure that you're thinking about, okay, well, I know it does this today. You don't want to make breaking schema changes that mm-hmm. suddenly all the other servers are trying to insert into a column that you removed and you have to think about things a little differently.
Yep. Right. Now you know why people use a mega repo.
That's right.
Exactly.
I want to say that's, I think it was Facebook. They were talking about that in terms of they still have one master repo mm-hmm. with lots of small ones. And it was interesting, you know, way to sort of tackle things.
It's like Windows, right? It's like one repo too.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
They just moved to Git or something, didn't they? Like last year?
It was like a fork of Git that was like the largest Git repo in the world or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, I'm sure they have commits from like, you know, back when it was created. So I can only imagine.
Or whatever, yeah.
And they probably have all the assets from all the images and everything.
Oh,
and
man.
I can only imagine how long that takes.
How many versions of Clippy?
3.1 icons?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like how many versions of Clippy are in the source code?
Exactly.
I guess that's Office. So, yeah. So never mind. But yeah, just in terms of, I've worked in terms of building like a deployment app in that sort of scenario. And it's like, you have to say, okay, for your load balancer, mm-hmm. take it out of load balancer, deploy to it, or run smoke tests, verify that everything's still good, then put it back in, and then go to the next server.
Right.
And this is another thing where, you know, lots of cloud options will have something to sort of help with that. At some scale, you're going to have to get involved in that, though.
Yeah, like Heroku, I guess, like these days with their new CI stuff, it's like a DNS switch or something, right? Like
mm-hmm,
you know, they pretty much leave, like if you're using their pipelines and you deploy to staging and everything's good, and then when you hit promote to production, it only takes like a split second mm-hmm. to promote it. But that's because they're technically like, they already have it already compiled. It's already mm-hmm. running. It's already warmed up. And then they basically just swap environment variables. They do like whatever the smallest amount of work they can do make sure that it's not, you know, to make sure that it has the right environment variables and everything, but they're not spinning up a new server. They're not, you know, so it's amazing what they do now. So definitely mm-hmm. look into the options that, you know, DNS is one that a lot of people use to help fight the deployment madness sometimes as well.
Right.
So. I think we're about out of time today. Does anybody have anything else they want to cover before we wrap it up?
I don't think so. Feel free to shoot us questions if you have any or comments on this topic. Clear function.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag it depends.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. I've had a good time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to It Depends, a podcast by Clear Function. Clear Function is a group of happy engineers based in Memphis, Tennessee. We partner with visionaries to bring their ideas to life. For more information, check out our website at clearfunction.com.